Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. We have two things to do tonight. I'll be reviewing the news first, and then I would like to talk about Ted Kaczynski. A lot of you guys have been messaging me about him, and I've always been dismissive. And I realized that I was wrongly dismissive. I realized that this guy has been saying some very intelligent stuff, although he was a terrorist, you know. But that's no reason to dismiss his belief. And I think partly the reason I've been hesitant at going through the whole thing, well, there's two reasons. First, it was YouTube censorship. I was like, every time I was starting to read his manifesto, I was like, okay, well, I can't talk about this anyways because I'm on YouTube. And so so it's an example where censorship actually keeps you from thinking, because I was unable to engage in subjects that I wouldn't be able to cover. So I was like, it's a loss of my time. And secondly, the manifesto did start with a lot of psychologizing of leftists, and I think it's the wrong approach. I think he's a little wrong on this, but he was so insightful and so right in his analysis, despite I think his fundamentals in understanding truly a genetic basis for the understanding of human behavior that was missing. He was really psychologizing the human race and seeing all of our defects as being caused by lacks of wants and unsatisfied desires. In that sense, he was very Freudian. But the fact that he got to the truth with this Freudian approach leads me to believe that he was extremely intelligent and that he has reached the right conclusions in his... It's amazing that in his manifesto, what published around 1994 or 1995, I don't remember, before Google existed, this guy saw the rise of technology and how it ultimately takes over the mind and the lives of people. And he wanted to start a revolutionary movement against it. In that sense, he did see the revolutionary phenotype coming. And now that I've read the whole thing, now that I was open-minded enough to get through the first 20 points of his manifesto, I realized that he was extremely intelligent. Suburban says, Ted's unofficial IQ is like 167, is what I've heard. Yeah, they say he passed a test when he was a student and that it was, that's why he skipped his sixth grade. He was extremely intelligent. And so I'll be reviewing his life, the circumstances of his bombs, and I'll be reviewing the manifesto and what was right about it. I think that what he's been appealing to is a very needed movement against the overtake of human realities by technology. I fully agree with him, although I'm not as much of an anti-technologist as he is. I think that there are good things in this technology. I think that it was wonderful how YouTube first allowed free engagement and free debate of the kind that couldn't exist before. And it has put together people around the world that wouldn't have been put together. So I don't think that everything must be rejected in technology, but he thinks that. And in the way in a way I have to respect I have to respect this kind of no compromise approach. In a way, maybe if you compromise with the goods of technology, you're already committing the sins that will eventually lead to your destruction. So I have to grant him that. I will read a letter that comes from him from jail, because he's in jail forever. He has six life sentences. And he says from the medical center Butner in North Carolina, thank you for your kind letter postmarked December 23rd, 2021, which I have received on January 27th, 2022. You conclude your letter with get well soon. There is yet work to be done. You're right, there is work to be done. A lot of work. In fact, the work has barely been started. But I won't be able to do much of it. I'm not going to get well soon. Or ever, because I have terminal cancer. I can't expect to live more than 2 years at the outside, and I may well be dead in less than a year, so the work will have to be done by younger people. What about you? What are you doing? I'm told that you've ordered a paperback French and English dictionary for me, for which I thank you, but seen in relation to the problems we face, the matter of the dictionary is trivial. Have you been following the recommendations in sections 28 and 29 of Chapter 4 of Anti-Tech Revolution? Have you made any efforts at organization in accordance to Rule 1 of Chapter 3? If you want to organize but don't know where to begin, let me know and I'll give you some suggestions, but my suggestions will not be easy to carry out. We don't want dilettantes who are ready to do only what is easy. We need people who are capable of total commitment and are prepared to take any task, no matter how difficult or unpleasant or time-consuming it may be. Yours for Wild Nature, Ted Kaczynski. So those are the words of Ted Kaczynski, who's about to die. And so we'll be reviewing the news first, because I think the news is less important, and then I will finish on my review of the Ted Kaczynski life and manifesto. So first, we saw that Parler was into censorship. I didn't know much about it, because I don't engage much with Parler, but it seems that the video by Mark Dice, which was highlighting the use of the N-word by the Young Turks and calling for their cancellation, has been hidden. And Parler has this bizarre way of censoring. They say trolling content detected. Show content anyway. This is a new one to me. Trolling content. Well, it's not trolling content. It's a compilation of the use of the N-word by the Young Turks. It's journalistic content. It's summarized content. It's not trolling content. So this is a new one to me, that you would designate something as trolling. And if it's trolling, why is it still there? Well, who is being trolled here? Thomas Howard says, as JF already covered the news of the DMED revelation on military health in 2021. I may have said a word or two about it. I don't remember, but I've seen this news item come again and again. The thing is, I've covered the claim. The claim was made in the, among other places, in the Senate hearing by some senator who decided to hold these hearings on his own. The claim is that the military database shows a massive increase of all sorts of diseases, and it is claimed that these increases could all be due to the vaccine. I've not covered it by giving it credence, because I'm not sure this is a right way to acquire, to see a scientifically convincing difference. Like, how is this database being gathered? Who are the people gathering? Are they making the same effort to gather this information in 2020 versus 2021? And I was proved right by the response from the government, because the response for the government now is, well, it's because of a bug. So the increase in 2022 or 2021 is totally artificial. It's due to a bug that has not properly compiled the past events before 2021. Now, I will note that on the outset, the data doesn't seem super compelling, in the sense that it would be an increase of all diseases, basically. Things that we wouldn't expect were caused by the vaccine. And if a method leads you to conclude that a single vaccine induces a rise of all diseases in the range of like 10x, you have to ask yourself questions. So that's why I didn't cover this by giving it credence. I did mention that they said this in the Senate hearing, but I would be waiting for more serious look into, is this an overrepresentation due to biases and sampling? Let's not forget that a hidden data from the military personnel is not a scientific study. It has not had a stamp of approval that says, I'm a scientist, I think that I have a credible way to look into the question, and there is an increase. So let's be careful. Nicholas Petris says, 10x! Yes, the 10x is back, as people have been requesting. Someone has already sent a super chat on Entropy. Join me on Entropy. It is my favorite platform for super chat. Very important to support the show through your super chats on Entropy. Or you can use the support button on Odyssey. There is now a credit card option enabled. You just have to create an account on Odyssey. One moment. My voice is weak today. Do you agree that Ted's manifesto was deeply correct? Yes, no, or I haven't read it. That is the question tonight on Odyssey. The link to Entropy. Entropy is below the video. Some random bloke sends a super chat. He says, Ted K red-pilled me on leftist when I read his manifesto. He was ahead of the curve and brilliant on his analysis of the evils of leftism. Absolutely. And nothing that I say tonight should be interpreted as an appeal to violence or even somehow that I would respect what he has done in terms of violent attack. I think violence is should be opposed. So, you know, don't ban this video. It is not an elegy of everything that Ted K has done. Ted K has been committing acts that are crimes, and I think he should be punished for those. But leaving that aside, that doesn't mean that he was wrong in his manifesto, which is unrelated really to his crimes. So that's what we will review today. And I think you're totally right. He was extremely insightful, extremely in advance of his time. A YouTuber has been arrested for coke prank. He had someone call the police and say there are people who are weird in an orange car. And then they were in the orange car and they were clearly saying to the policeman, we have coke in the car, and the joke was that the policeman would open the back of the car and find that it was coke cans. It was like Coca-Cola, not actual cocaine. This is pranks gone too far, okay? So this guy would end up in jail probably with a felony. Because it's a felony to make a false call to the police. This is not funny. I mean, he could have ended up dying from it. He's lucky to be alive. Don't do that kind of stuff. It's ridiculous to do this for a YouTube video. Boomer jokes, says Nicholas Petris. Yes, it's pretty boomerish. The trucker border blockade in Couts is continuing. The border between the US and Canada is still being blocked by the truckers. This is a liar for the truckers who's been hired, I believe, by Rebel News to crowdfunded.
Issues associated with enforcement on this type of a protest, especially with some peculiar and large pieces of heavy equipment out on the highway, and the sheer volume of them creates an insurmountable issue for law enforcement to.
So he was saying that the law enforcement yesterday has been threatening the truckers to get them out. But he says that the amount of trucks is insurmountable, that even if they wanted, it would take days, and they don't seem to be able to have even the technical support necessary to move these heavy rigs. Gibson Go has taken over the Freedom Convoy funding. However, the page has disappeared today. It had reached $5.2 million. And now it's a 404 error at Give, Send, Go. I hope this is not censorship happening at Give, Send, Go. Or is it hacking? Or is it FBI? Or perhaps it's just an error. Perhaps Give, Send, Go has just never had a $5.2 million campaign work on their website. So perhaps it's just growing pains. Hopefully everything is okay with the money of the truckers. Go away says, give, send, go, exit, scam. I mean, their website otherwise works, and so I suspect there is something like a database error that they have to figure out. Maybe, you know, if their database is set so that at like 5,000 donation, poof, everything, the PHP scripts bugs, this could explain what's happening. Yesterday in Ottawa, the truckers have been targeted by police, although it was a very minor operation. The police came in, seized some fuel tanks. It was like two wheelbarrows of fuel tanks, and they arrested a couple of people saying, if you bring fuel to the truckers, we will arrest you. But yet, plenty of fuel has been still passing, even after those arrests. So it looks like they just went in. They just made a little photo up to show we're going to go after the people supporting the truckers. And then they ran out. So we had actually on camera people continuing to bring fuel. So it doesn't seem like the provisioning of fuel to the truckers and volunteer has been significantly intercepted. But they did a photo up to make it look like it was. It's pretty fascinating to me. I don't know what will happen with the arrest. In any case, the trucker protest seems to continue. We see it on live streams today. Trucks are across the city of Ottawa, and the city is not functional yet. So I don't know what to think. It's kind of a failure. It's kind of a display of a success, but it means nothing. Trucks have been provisioned with further fuel since then. Jeffrey Epstein sends 100 LBC. Thank you so much for the support. In fact, I think crypto is going well. I think that LBC is starting to have a little rise, and BTC is going well tonight. It's now at 44K for BTC. Very happy about this slow recovery of Bitcoin. Of course, we're not back to 60K. I would like to be back to 60K as soon as possible, but it's very encouraging. Jeffrey Epstein says, a theoretical question. Would it be possible in the metaverse to use the 4 feet distancing rule to cage women? Oh my God, I think you just found the flaw. You know, the 4 feet distancing rule is a rule that makes it so that you cannot be close to 4 feet or else the program will push you back. But you're right, we could cage someone in principle if you surround them by four people. Someone could be worse than harassed by a single person. They could be harassed by a coordinated group of four or even five persons to get the three-dimensional effect. I hadn't thought of this. Wow, you know, you have to ask questions about your mental sanity when your brain goes there. I think you're not ready for the metaverse. Warner Bros. Sued over abysmal Matrix Resurrections release. Warner Bros. Is being sued by co-financiers Village Roadshow over the hybrid release of the sci-fi sequel, The Matrix Resurrections. As with all of Warner's 2021 titles, the fourth Matrix film was released on the big screen and the company's streaming service, HBO Max, as a response to the pandemic. Yeah, it's not the first time that we see this. You have a lot of artists who are contractually engaged with these companies that says it's going to be a theater release. So the artists are happy, it's going to sell tickets, they're going to make a part of the profit. But then the companies cut the grass under their feet and they're like, oh, COVID-19, we have to release this on streaming platforms. And then on streaming platforms, they don't make as much money and it's not as grandiose and they end up losing a lot of money. I'm impressed that the streaming companies do that. It seems that they should be respecting their contractual obligations. The NYC mayor is being questioned by a journalist. It's the new NYC mayor. So the journalist was asking him because it's being questioned whether he's a true vegan because he goes around claiming that he is a true vegan, but the journalist was pointing out that he may be eating fish and meat, and it looks like he may not be fully vegan. And his answer is totally a cope. He's totally trying to avoid responding directly to the
You
question.
brought up your eating habits. I just want to clarify something. How often do you eat fish, and do you eat any other animal proteins?
I eat a plant-based centered life. Some people.
A plant-centered life. So it's like you see how your plate is made of a meat piece and then of plants on the side. He does the opposite. He puts the plant at the center of his plate, and then there's meat on the side. I.e., he's just eating like you.
Want to call me vegan? Vegans eat Oreos and they drink Coca-Cola. I
Vegans eat Oreos and they drink Coca-Cola.
don't. I eat a plant-based centered life.
A plant-based certain life. You lead a plant-based certain centered life. You don't eat a plant-based centered life.
And those who are the food police for me, they can food police all the time. I eat a plant-based centered life.
Like this doctor is like, yeah, we get what you're saying. Yeah, that's the way. Yeah, so basically the vegan business, including vegan YouTubing, by the way, is a big scam. They have to eat secret meat somewhere to survive, and then they make it look like they don't eat it, and they are misleading people toward extremely dangerous lifestyles. The Bias News reports on Gab. The Virginia Supreme Court dismisses a challenge brought against Governor Youngkin's executive order that seeks to end mandatory masking in schools. Wonderful. So the order is reinstated. So that's the Virginia Supreme Court saying to the lower courts, no, your challenge is not working. The ban on forced masking is in effect, and we're going to apply it. Absolutely wonderful. Meanwhile, Illinois high school students told to put on masks or leave, and they decide to leave. After an Illinois judge struck down mask mandates in Illinois, high school students in a Chicago suburb were still told to mask up or leave. It's amazing the amount of cases like this we see across the nation where a judge has already found that the mask mandates are illegal, and yet the schools say, oh, well, despite this legal finding, we're still very convinced about our rules, so we're going to keep applying them. Like, what the fuck are you doing? You're violating the rights of people knowingly. Billionaire Peter Thiel to leave Facebook board to help advance the Trump agenda. Billionaire venture capitalist and PayPal founder Peter Thiel has decided to leave the board of Meta Platforms. He says he wants to concentrate on the Trump agenda, pushing the Trump agenda. It's quite interesting. What does that mean? Will he be more on Truth Social? Will he be trying to have Republicans elected that are pro very much pro-Trump so that Trump can make a comeback in 2024? I don't know, but we don't know what his plans are. But anyways, he's out of Facebook. And meanwhile, Facebook is continuing to lower in value. That was about 3 days ago, the big drop, and it's been dropping since then, dropping, down to 224 now, and at its peak, it was at 322. I think it's time to abandon Facebook. If you are still on Facebook, please be somewhere else while Facebook is in the process of becoming absolutely cringe. You don't want to be there when it attains max cringe. Rumble's SPAC explodes higher after CEO offers Joe Rogan $100 million to make the world a better place. So this is just an offer made out of nowhere. It's like it doesn't even include a potential response from Joe Rogan, but it's just a letter that the Rumble CEO made to Joe Rogan saying, "Hey, we can pay you $100 million for over four years if you move to Rumble. So the question then is, if Joe Rogan attains a point where Spotify, the contract with Spotify is ended, or perhaps Spotify with themselves want to get rid of Joe Rogan, there could be a trilateral deal transferring Joe Rogan to Rumble. That would be the only way for Joe Rogan to pursue the censorship-less lifestyle that he was on. But I don't even know if Joe Rogan is interested in doing this, because Joe Rogan has decided to kneel already. So I don't know if he can do this mentally. Like, does Joe Rogan need free speech, or was he just thinking that free speech was cool, but that if he's denied it, he won't fight for it? That's a big question that hasn't been answered by anyone. Go Away says, Jeff, Odyssey should offer Joe Rogan 100 million LBC to join the platform. Yes, and I'm willing to add to the Odyssey offer to Joe Rogan. This is an official offering. If Joe Rogan moves to Odyssey, I will emit and deposit directly in his bank account, in his wallet, 100 million JF coin. So the ball is in your camp, Joe Rogan. The ball is in your camp. The modern serfdom model and the Bitcoin escape hatch. Everything about society sets up to become subservient to the pursuit of the mortgage, but Bitcoin changes that. I absolutely agree. Great article. And yes, Bitcoin liberates us from much dependence onto the system. I love it. And that's why I love that Bitcoin is doing good today. And finally, before we start our review of Ted Kaczynski's life, Ukraine and NATO agree threat of Russian invasion is low, but US continue apocalyptic rhetoric. Ukraine is again trying to give Washington a dose of reality and clamping down on overly alarmist hype surrounding the potential for a Russian invasion of Ukraine. As we detailed earlier, Biden's national security advisor in Sunday interviews said the invasion could come any day now, or possibly even tomorrow. But now there are other people in NATO, including European countries, that are saying to the US, calm down, okay? Calm down. And it doesn't look like we are in an imminent situation of war. So just calm down. All right, so let's get started on the life of Ted Kaczynski. And again, for those who were not present at the beginning of the show, I essentially want to say I apologize. Many of you have been bringing my attention toward his manifesto across the years, and I've always been dismissive because I was always reading the 10 or 20 first points, and I was like, okay, that's a psychologizing discourse onto leftists and its interpretations of the kind, oh, they lack this, and so they satisfy themselves by doing this or that. It's all extremely psychologized, and in that sense, I think it's not a proper model of the mind. But he's so not far from reality that if you jump over these first 20 points, and you get into his predictions, I think his predictions are absolutely right on target. Ted Kaczynski was right on pretty much everything. And even if he has used a detoured way to get there, he has attained a full understanding of the problem with modern society. And he was extremely intelligent in doing so very early, as soon as the 70s, 80s, and 90s, where he has done most of his thoughts and writings. So, who is Ted Kaczynski? Ted Kaczynski is an academic. He is a mathematician. In the 70s, he has published even mathematical papers. this is a paper by Ted Kaczynski, Boundary Functions for Functions Defined in a Disk. He was a geometer He was very much a Euclidean geometrist. Look at this. He makes lemmas and explains all of the mathematical consequences. In this particular case, he was interested in the arcs that are inscribed into a circle. This is writing by Ted Kaczynski in the 70s. So he was really a mathematician. In his childhood, when I look at his Wikipedia biography, his childhood was spent in Chicago. He was the son of Polish Americans. I don't know if they were Polish Jews, but in any case, he was raised as Catholic, and eventually his parents became atheist. So one of the things that happened in his childhood is that first he skipped the sixth grade because he was deemed too intelligent, having a IQ test scoring at 167. So he was transferred to another school where, unfortunately, it wasn't a good solution for him and he was bullied. He had a case of skin rash, severe skin rash, called hives. And during a part of his childhood, he had to be isolated. I don't know exactly why. Maybe it was believed that it was a response to the environment and that he needed to be in an isolated situation. But his brother was telling the story of him being isolated in an hospital for many months and coming back from this experience, being never the same again, having developed a kind of isolationism. So he was apparently shocked by this period, but I don't think it can explain his later behavior. I think there was evidence of him being intelligent, independent of this. And I think that any intelligent person eventually starts enjoying time isolated from the social world. The social world is very painful for anyone above 120 IQ. Thomas Howard says, Ted will solve/has solved the Goldbach conjecture, forcing JF to take back his kind words out of spite. No, I don't think that he has solved the Goldbach conjecture. I would be very happy if he did. All right. Then he was exposed to very bizarre psychological experiments. Apparently, during his first year at Harvard University, he participated to psychological studies that were run by psychologists there, and there's all sorts of rumors around these psychological studies being part of Project MK Ultra or that kind of stuff, but I don't know. It doesn't matter, really. They were psychology experiments where he was asked to explain his beliefs on a piece of paper and write an essay, like his deep philosophical beliefs. And then they would have an actor come in, and while his brain activity was recorded, they would have the actor take the most fundamental beliefs of the guy and mock him. Like, ha, you believe that you believe this and that? Ah, you're an idiot. Just to test his reaction. Now, these encounters were filmed, so the subject in what Murray himself called vehement, sweeping, and personally abusive attacks, using the content of the essays as ammunition. Electrodes monitored the subject's physiological reactions. These encounters were filmed, and subjects' expressions of anger and rage were later played back to them repeatedly. The experiment lasted 3 years, with someone verbally abusing and humiliating Kaczynski each week. Kaczynski spent 200 hours as part of the study. This guy was abused serially on his beliefs as part of an experiment on, oh, how does the brain mechanism of belief work? How do people react when they are challenged on deeply held beliefs? I find it amazing that that this is happening. I don't think that this caused his later behavior. I don't think that this caused the bombings. This is not how I would express it. But it's certainly weird that it happens in a man that ends up sending bombs to essentially academics across the nation with the goal of reducing technological progress. So he goes on in life in a mathematics career, wins a couple of minor awards, and writes apparently stellar text in mathematics, getting the best compliments from the people who were supervising him. His doctoral advisor called him the best I have ever directed. So apparently an extremely intelligent guy. This is a picture of him while he was doing his mathematics studies. So an extremely high-level guy, but who eventually gets tired of teaching. Apparently, although he did like the truth and mathematics, he was not getting super well reviewed by the students when he started teaching. And so it seems that the social part of academia was annoying to him. And it reminds me of myself, because same thing here. I wanted to be a researcher, but the whole pairing with necessarily being a teacher, although I don't think I'm a bad teacher, I'm certainly not fascinated at the idea of being a teacher. It's not a format of communication, like bridging to the low intelligence person. It's not something I like doing. I wouldn't be terrible at it, but I wouldn't be stellar at it. So he goes back to live with his parents and eventually isolates himself into a cabin in the wood. And somewhere along this line, this is where the bombings start. The bombings have been spread between 1978 to 1995, so a total of 17 years of bombing, not being caught by the FBI. Let's see a couple of the descriptions of the initial bombings. So Kaczynski's first mail bomb was directed at Buckley Crist, a professor of materials engineering at Northwestern University. On May 25, 1978, a package bearing Crist's return address was found in a parking lot at the University of Illinois at Chicago. The package was returned to Chris, who was suspicious because he had not sent it, so he contacted campus police. Officer Terry Marker opened the package, which exploded and caused minor injuries. Kaczynski had returned to Chicago for the May 1978 bombing and stayed there for a time to work with his father and brother at a foam rubber factory. In August 1978, his brother fired him for writing insulting limericks about a female supervisor Ted had courted briefly. The supervisor later recalled Kaczynski as intelligent and quiet, but remembered little of their acquaintanceship and firmly denied they had any romantic relationship. Kaczynski's second bomb was sent nearly 1 year after the first one, again to Northwestern University. The bomb concealed inside a cigar box and left on the table caused minor injuries to graduate student John Harris when he opened it. So he was targeting professors in the field of engineering. And yes, Justet has just shared a link, and there is a movie coming out. It's coming out at the end of February. The trailer is out now. The movie is called Ted K. I will certainly be watching the movie with interest, but it's not available now. It's just been shown in festival up to now. It should be public at the end of February. Another thing that I didn't mention about the early life of Ted Kaczynski is that he once ended up, for a moment, apparently at least, thinking that he was a trans. So when he was young, when he was a young adult, apparently, he ended up in the process of discussing with a psychiatrist sex change surgery. And he has ended up in the office, waited for the psychiatrist to arrive, and chose against gender transition and escaped the office, essentially. They describe it as follows. For a period of several weeks in 1966, Kaczynski experienced intense sexual fantasies of being a female and decided to undergo gender transition. He arranged to meet with a psychiatrist but changed his mind in the waiting room and did not disclose his reason for making the appointment. Afterwards, enraged, he considered killing the psychiatrist and other people whom he hated. Kaczynski described this episode as a major turning point in his life. I felt disgusted about what my uncontrolled sexual cravings had almost led me to do, and I felt humiliated, and I violently hated the psychiatrist. Just then, there came a major turning point in my life. Like a phoenix, I burst from the ashes of my despair to a glorious new hope. So, 1966, that's 12 years before the bombings start. Ted Kaczynski having the fantasy of being a female, but then deciding against going on the path of gender transition. Tushter says, my trans friend idolizes Ted K. Oh, really? Okay, and as a reminder, because I did the warning at the in the early show, but I will do it again for those joining. The review of Ted K's life is not a way to advocate for violence or say that I agree in any way of with the violence that he's committed. I think it is wrong, but I think the kind of character of this guy is extremely interesting, and I wanted to document it as we learned that Ted K is about to die from cancer. Wouldn't it be nice if there was a way through technology, maybe, although he may not like it? Wouldn't there be a way to plug Ted K on Odyssey from his jail cell or from his hospital? Wouldn't there be a way for him to watch this show? That would be interesting to me, because I'd like him, before he dies, if he can, to read The Revolutionary Phenotype. In any case, so those are the list of the bombings that have happened from 1978 to 1995, 17 years of bombing, two cases of bombs that haven't exploded, but the vast majority of the bombs have exploded, some of them causing minor diseases, minor cuts and burns, but eventually causing severe burns, loss of fingers, loss of vision in the victims, and eventually three of them causing death. Hello, Mama JF, what's up?
Hey, I think in the US you can send your book by the mail.
Yes, you maybe someone in the crowd would be able to find the address of Ted K and maybe send him an exemplar of The Revolutionary Phenotype.
Yes, or was it with, is it on your show? I saw this. That you have to go on the I think you have to order it from Amazon and then it goes directly to the jail.
Send it as a gift.
Yeah, like
that makes sense. Maybe there's a way. If someone knows about this, if you want to do it, that would be wonderful. If you want me to do it, I could do it if you can give me the trick and explain. SKT points out we should continue to bother Brett Weinstein. Look, guys, at some point you have to do intelligent investment. Brett Weinstein, the chances that he reads The Revolutionary Phenotype in the next year is maybe 50%. Ted Kaczynski is going to die in the next year. So Ted Kaczynski should be our target. Because he's much more likely to read The Revolutionary Phenotype. And to be honest, based on his writings, I have to say that I must conclude is certainly much more intelligent, perhaps than me, and certainly than Brett Weinstein. So let's get through the manifesto. So what happened is that that's a text published in 1996. So in 1996, Ted Kaczynski, having performed 17 years of bombing behind him and having led to the death of 3 people and severe damage and many other, Ted Kaczynski decides from his log cabin in the woods, and I think there was a picture. This is a picture of his arrest eventually. So eventually, this is where we found out that the Unabomber was living. It's a log cabin, extremely primitive. Okay, people are sending me his address. Okay, I'll see if I can. The thing is, I believe he's been moved to a medical center, so I don't know if sending to the U.S. penitentiary is the solution. I would like to know, does someone have the address of the recent medical center where he was relocated for dying from cancer? So that is him. He was living in a log cabin. The sheriff came in, and because the reason he was found is that after publishing his manifesto in the New York Times and the Washington Post, his brother recognized the style of writing. And his brother had been annoyed by his wife for many years, saying, look into your brother. A lot of the talk around by then it was called the Unabomber Manifesto. she was telling him, his brother, she was saying, you should report your brother to the FBI. It does look like him. But eventually the text gets published, and it makes the brother conclude, this is probably my brother, because the style of writing was recognizable from past texts that Ted Kaczynski had been writing and had been sharing with his brother. So he was living a life withdrawn from technological society in the wilderness, and they found in his log cabin they found a lot of evidence that he was the bomber. They found parts to assemble into bombs. They found documents documenting his bomb attempts and what was working, what was not working, and various plans and instructions to put together the bombs. So he ended up getting arrested due to this manifesto. The way he sent this manifesto is he sent it to several outlets, including the New York Times, the Washington Post, and other smaller outlets. And he demanded that the manifesto be published. And he said that if it was not published by the two bigger names, the New York Times and the Washington Post, that he was reserving the right to kill another person. He was reserving the right to attack randomly some person through a mail bomb, and that someone would die if he didn't get the max exposure from the top newspaper. And eventually the FBI and the Attorney General recommended to the newspaper to publish it, because they concluded that it was probably a good way to catch Ted Kaczynski, that it was probably a good way for anyone to recognize his style of writing. And as it turns out, they were extremely right. It turns out that this is exactly how Ted Kaczynski got caught. His brother recognized his style of writing in the New York Times. Carnival is on Entropy. He says, the social world is extremely painful for those over 120 IQ. One of your most true statements to date. Well, yeah, because the social world doesn't even operate on the assumptions of the search for truth and the search for non-contradiction and coherence. And on top of it, most people are stupid. So most people are not only stupid, but they are also not interested in the pursuit of the truth. So it's a double combo that that makes it extremely painful for anyone very intelligent to engage with large groups of individuals. Tillman says, Jeff, I think his brother is the one that turned him in. Well, that's exactly what I've been saying for 10 minutes now. It's exactly what I've been saying. Like, are you even watching the show right now? Okay, Industrial Society and Its Future. That is the title of the manifesto. And I will go over each section and tell you my comments. I believe that it was an extremely good writing, extremely interesting, and it was more radical than I would be in terms of rejecting technology. I think that there would be no harm done if certain elements of technology were used by us and even by people who object to other technologies. I, with the revolutionary phenotype, I object with the genetic engineering of the human race because I think it undermines our own existence and the evolutionary pressures that keep us a Darwinian life form. That is a big problem, and it will be an undoing of everything that we are, including intelligence, creativity, and everything else. But I don't think that we have to reject all technologies for a proper combat of the revolutionary phenotype to be won. But I have to credit Ted Kaczynski here, because perhaps he is right. Perhaps if you let a little bit of technology in your life, you're already letting too much, so that eventually, step by step, you will concede and concede until you let technology control your genes. So, in his introduction, he makes the case, we therefore advocate for a revolution against the industrial system. For him, there is a continuity in Ted Kaczynski with the industrial revolution, so even technologies like machines, like industries, manufacturers, that kind of stuff. To him, this is not fundamentally different than Google, Twitter, even if Google and Twitter didn't exist when he wrote this. To him, this is all a continuum of the progression of technology taking over society and taking over the means of production in human society and eventually also constraining the psychology of individuals to submit to the system. And he starts with the psychology of modern leftism. And this is where I was kind of annoyed. This is the reason why I was most of the time not continuing my reading of this manifesto. It's that the psychology of modern leftism seeks to frame everything in terms of wants and desires and failures to meet them. And I don't like it. I don't like theories of human psychology that are based in motivators of that kind. I prefer basing in genetic knowledge. The reason why is ultimately all motivators are genetically caused, and all motivators must boil down to some evolutionary force. If we like sweet stuff, it's because sweet stuff was better to survive than non-sweet stuff, period. And so I don't like these people who construct the desires of the leftist to control, or the desire of the leftist to have his unsatisfied want for freedom be satisfied. I don't like this because they rely on axioms about humans being in a certain way, and ultimately the question is, why are humans in that way? And it has to be evolution. So that being said, leaving aside, I think he starts making extremely good point around over-socialization. He says, the two psychological tendencies that underlie modern leftism we call feelings of inferiority and over-socialization. Feelings of inferiority are characteristic of modern leftism as a whole, while over-socialization is characteristic only of a certain segment of modern leftism. But this segment is highly influential. He was right on target in pointing to the over-socialization and its relationship with leftism. Ultimately, there is something extremely wrong in the way modern society attributes a lack of socialization, kind of diagnoses a lack of socialization in young people at times and sometimes in older people, to try to shape them to the requirements of the system. And over-socialization, I believe that we are totally in it right now. Consider how children are thrown into classes of 30 other children. This is already more social interactions than our ancestors would ever get in their entire life. And on top of it, they have the female teacher, and on top of it, they go through this up to 18 years old. Ted Kaczynski takes an issue with the format of the kind of forced socialization that is imposed by our societies. And I think he's totally right. I think it's not so much that children are maladjusted and need to be fixed with drugs because they can't interact with this over-socialization. It's the over-socialization itself that is wrong. And that's why you end up having moral displays in leftism. That's why you end up having leftists who are willing to do anything, including self-contradiction, to adhere to a cause that is agreed upon by the collective. And this is a correct evaluation of the psychology of leftists when he says that leftists see it as a success not to find the truth or to be coherent or to fight for a principle of theirs. They find success when they fight collectively for a principle that has been perceived as being desirable by the collective. That's how leftists win. It's through a kind of social conquest. by only adhering to these principles, not that they deeply agree with internally, but that they can see is adhered to by the collective. Skatey says, Jeff, I would like to recommend you get a pair of 35-pound dumbbells and curl them until you can do other movements without too much joint exertion. A few simple set of curls a day will give you much-needed total body fitness, and a simple flat bench, which can easily be constructed, will assist you greatly. Bro, get out of here. I don't want to hear about this. What the fuck are you talking about? I don't have time to consider gym bros' concerns, okay? Tonight we're talking about the life of Ted Kaczynski. Try to focus, Katie! And wasn't Katie a mod of this channel? Why is he not a mod? Feelings of inferiority. Here, Ted Kaczynski goes into a trend of the left that we've seen only expand since he wrote this. He goes into this kind of adoration of victimhood that is part of the mind of leftists, and the fact that he could write this in the early 90s is quite amazing, because he talks about how the leftists, you know, they're looking for an oppressed group. He says, many leftists have an intense identification with the problem of groups that have an image of being weak, woman, defeated, American Indians, or homosexuals, or otherwise perceived as inferior. The leftists themselves feel that these groups are inferior. They would never admit to themselves that they have such feelings, but it is precisely because they do see these groups as inferior that they identify with their problems. And he adds, we do not mean to suggest that women, Indians, etc. are inferior. We are only making a point about leftist psychology. Man, this guy is right on target. Ultimately, leftists need a victim for their mindset to work. And so you only have to see the groups they are fighting for, and you'll realize that they are considering these groups inferior. It is precisely by this quality of being inferior that they have the attraction of qualifying as oppressed. He then goes on over-socialization, and he hits the nail on the head on each point. he says, "We do not claim that leftists, even the over-socialized type, never rebel against the fundamental values of society. Clearly, they sometimes do. Some over-socialized leftists have gone so far as to rebel against one of modern society's most important principles by engaging in physical violence. By their own account, violence is for them a form of liberation. In other words, by committing violence, they break through the psychological restraints that have been trained into them. Because they are over-socialized, these restraints have been more confining for them than for others, hence their need to break free of them. But they usually justify their rebellion in terms of mainstream values. If they engage in violence, they claim to be fighting against racism or the like." So, very well seen here. Leftists, although they can be revolutionary in their behavior, they will ultimately justify the reasons for their revolutionary attitude by adhering to values that are deeply values subscribed to by the system and favoring the system. He has this conception of a power process. And the power process is basically the idea of having a goal. I don't think that power process is the right label here, but it's basically the idea of having a goal and having the means to attain that goal freely and having some struggle in the pursuit of that goal and and having some autonomy in the pursuit of that goal, such that you're not totally being micromanaged to attain that goal. And I think there's something interesting in this definition. There's a concept there that definitely is very healthy. You know, if you can have these four conditions in what you pursue in life, you're going to be most likely very happy, very satisfied with life, independent of how strong the struggle was on your way up there. So if you can have a goal that is worth attaining, that goal is difficult to reach, there's some competition or struggle in getting there, and on top of it, you know, you solve the problems by your own intelligence or your own talent of some kind, that's the recipe for a good life. So I agree that the power process is an important aspect of human psychology and probably animals too, you know. He then defines surrogate activities. He says there are a lot of things in modern society that are fake instantiations of the power process. He says, for example, scientists and how they pursue arbitrary or abstract goals, like the mathematician wanting to attain some kind of truth about a given problem, or the specialist in chemistry who really care about this molecule. And to him, those are surrogate activities in the sense that they come to emulate what the power process would give you as a satisfaction, but they don't fully capture the full struggle of the power process. And the reason a modern surrogate activity may not be properly giving the experience of the full power process can be multiple. I think he invokes, for example, the fact that these goals may not really matter to you, that there may not be an actual struggle in attaining them, like the monarchs who were hunting, you know, in their private enclaves, where essentially animals had been brought there so that they were easy to hunt. Or you can be in the modern times, if you are part of a corporation that is highly controlling, you can be attaining goals, but you're so micromanaged in the attainment of these goals that ultimately they don't qualify as an autonomous pursuit. He expands on autonomy in another section, and he explains that, you know, in the modern world, you get to a job, you can essentially survive in our world if you just know what to do when being told to do something. If you can just follow orders, basically 95% of the people, that's all they need to do. If you can just follow order, if you can just bring this food from here to here, you're going to get paid and you're going to have a life and survive. But he says this kind of surrogate activity, or the kind of breach of the power process in so many ways by modern society, causes social problems. And this is very long, you know, he gets into the whole disruption of it, but I can skip over that and simply summarize that basically social problems, drug addiction, blah, 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 anything, the lack of satisfaction with modern life, all of it could be caused by how the industrial and technological society came in and imposed these things on the behavior of humans that are incompatible ultimately with the power process, with the need of humans to strive and struggle for something meaningful. He then explains in the part how some people adjust. He explains that there are various ways in which individuals will deal with the demands of modern society and how they are incompatible. Some, like him, apparently have chosen to isolate. Many will simply choose to do what they need to do in the system. Some will have a surrogate activity in the sense of pursuing something in your hobby time that makes you not a threat to the system, but that allows you to enjoy your own life and give you the illusion of pursuing a kind of struggle. He then describes the motive of scientists, and he shows that, you know, this whole conception that modern scientists are driven by either curiosity or benefit to humanity is false. He says, if they were really curious, why would they specialize that much? Like, if you're really a curious person, if you've been guided to specialized chemistry by your curiosity, why don't you show the same curiosity about nuclear physics or about astronomy? And he's right. And so ultimately, he presents the scientific endeavor of the modern world as being a surrogate activity, something that looks like the power process, but that is not it. He has a weird definition of freedom, something that I would not agree with because it's too narrow. But it's okay to defend the term narrowly when you make an argument. But he says, we are going to argue that industrial technological society cannot be reformed in such a way as to prevent it from progressively narrowing the sphere of human freedom. By freedom, we mean the opportunity to go through the power process with real goals, not the artificial goals of surrogate activities, and without interference, manipulation, or supervision from anyone, especially from any large organization. Freedom means being in control, either as an individual or as a member of a small group, of the life and death issues of one's existence, food, clothing, shelter, and defense against whatever threats there may be in one's environment. So, although I don't think it's a proper label here, we can skip over this because it doesn't matter. His point is still good. It's that in the modern world, technology and industries came in and pushed things either toward, okay, we're going to let you free to pursue it, but it's meaningless, or it's meaningful, and therefore we're not going to let you free of pursuing it. Essentially, things have been pushed from the middle where you could find some things that are both meaningful to pursue and you're free to pursue them. And slowly things have been pushed in either we won't let you pursue it because it's too important, so you're going to be micromanaged by the corporate world and the industrial technological process, or it's totally abstract and we're going to let you pursue it, but only in your hobby time. So for one example of this is mathematics or academic pursuits or hobbies. It's like, okay, you can collect all of the baseball cards you want. It's meaningless. So the system doesn't care so much about recruiting, micromanaging you in the process. But if you create meaningful stuff like food for people or clothes, the state comes in and the industrial complex as a whole and starts legislating, micromanaging, ultimately giving every order for every move you're going to make in the process. Something can be said also about the raising of children. How, since that's a thing that matters, it fell in this other category where the state micromanages the transmission of knowledge to children down to doing it as a whole through public school. And the parents were slowly withdrawn from their liberty to do so. Some principles of history. He talks about revolutions. What I retain from his talk about history and revolution is he has a good understanding of history in that he sees that history will have a tendency that goes to a certain direction in an uncontrollable way. And any movements against the natural movement of history toward its convergence point will be hopeless, will serve nothing. He's ultimately very black-pilled. For a revolutionary, he's extremely black-pilled, and he's saying, if history is headed toward a certain point, any movement to the contrary will simply have temporary effects. And so he doesn't believe that single humans have the power to fundamentally revert history or to drive, for example, a new society based on a paper ideology. So guys, I don't like banning people, but I'm annoyed because you guys have been talking for 20 minutes about fitness. I don't care about fitness. This is not a show about fitness. I don't give a shit about fitness. I think the next time I see the word fitness or gym or weights or deadlift or whatever, I think I'm going to ban everyone that I see using this word. Shut the fuck up. Okay? So, industrial technological society cannot be reformed, where he goes on to say you cannot make a small change that will fix society and stop it from its course of reaching total technological control over the human body, over the human experience. That's part of the black-pilled aspect, but I think he has to be right. You know, you see how after his writings, how Google took over, how the internet became our entire lives, I think he has to be right. There was not a little push you could have done in 1992 or 1994 or 1998 that would stop the progress. And he has an extremely fine understanding of why that is. He understands that technology doesn't just come and violate human desires and ruin our lives. That's not how technology works. Technology comes and is good. And that's a principle I've explained in the revolutionary phenotype. Ultimately, the revolutionary phenotype wins because it's good. It helps you. And people adhere to the genetic editing because at first it helps them. And they get those who don't do this get outcompeted by others. And there's no way to fight against it, because all that's required is that a small part of society benefits from the gains brought up by technology, and they will eventually be outcompeting all the others who don't. That's almost evolutionary thinking, although it's very rare that Ted Kaczynski refers to it explicitly as a kind of selfish gene-based theory. He then talks about how restrictions to freedom is unavoidable in industrial society. And he describes how ultimately industrial society has compelled humans to submit to the system because it needed them to do so. If so much actions of humans were let to happen that are going against the interest of the system would break down. So the way the system survives and the reason it has survived is precisely that it has behavioral control over people. And he explains how, for example, in schools, this behavioral control can take the form of pharmaceutical interventions, how psychiatry ultimately is already a form of behavioral control by the system, where we justify this behavioral control, he says, by humanitarian concerns. We say, oh, it would be terrible to leave a depressed person without support and not give them antidepressants. So the system ultimately fixes the incompatibility between individual behavior and the interest of the technological industrial system by fixing it in the brains of people. And he says it's going to get worse, it's going to get to genetic engineering. He says that ultimately technology has a more attractive effect on people than the aspiration for freedom, and that's why it will it has a good chance of winning. Now, in the view of Ted Kaczynski, the way we can win as resisting the advance of a certain technology of all technologies, in his view, is by exploiting weaknesses of the system. He says there doesn't need to be an action necessarily taken now. He says you have to let the system converge toward its own weakness, and then you have to take action at the moment where the system becomes that weak. So this could take the form in a future society where, let's say, in 50 years or 100 years, discontent has accumulated in the population. They're not, like you see discontent of the kind we've seen in the anti-vax protest or the anti-mandate protest. And only at these points of conflict between the system and the individual could a revolutionary person, someone who wants to stop the development of technology in our society, could take action to kind of surf on this discontent and surf on the already existing conflict. So his view of history is not so much that you come in and you create a whole society from nothing. It's just that you contribute in little ways to undermining the system when it's at its weakest. So that's, and then we are headed toward the conclusion of the manifesto. He talks about strategy, about what to do given his blackpilling. And he talks about making movements that are based on small communities, recovering the power process, isolating from certain of the bad effects of modern societies, but most importantly, waiting for these moments at which action can be taken that would undermine the system's stability. Because the walk of the system going forward and growing in terms of its control on children and on adults is a walk that comes with certain defects, that comes with certain conflicts. And there will be exploitable moments in that imperfect walk forward. He concludes on a final note saying, throughout this article, we've made imprecise statements and statements that ought to have had all sorts of qualifications and reservations attached to them. And some of our statements may be flatly false. Lack of sufficient information and the need for brevity made it impossible for us to formulate our assertions more precisely or add all the necessary qualifications. And of course, in a discussion of this kind, one must rely heavily on intuitive judgment, and that can sometimes be wrong. So we don't claim that this article expresses more than a crude approximation to the truth. All the same, we are reasonably confident that the general outlines of the picture we have painted here are roughly correct. Just one possible weak point needs to be mentioned. We have portrayed leftism in its modern form as a phenomenon peculiar to our time, and as a symptom of the disruption of the power process. But we might possibly be wrong about this. Over-socialized types who try to satisfy their drive for power by imposing their morality on everyone have certainly been around for a long time. But we think that the decisive role played by feelings of inferiority, low self-esteem, powerlessness, identification with victims by people who are not themselves victims is a peculiarity of modern leftism. Identification with victims by people, not themselves victims, can be seen to some extent in 19th century leftism and early Christianity, but as far as we can make out, symptoms of low self-esteem were not nearly so evident in these movements or in any other movements as they are in modern leftism. But we are not in a position to assert confidently that no such movements have existed prior to modern leftism. This is a significant question to which historians ought to give their attention. So I find it amazing how this guy is super reasonable in his ideological assessment, and at times he's in this manifesto. It's not grandiose. It's like he's saying, oh yeah, I may be wrong there, but I think this gives you a general idea. It's amazing that a guy who has done more than 15 bombings or something like that ends up being so reasonable in his estimation of his own ideology and his own understanding of things. So that concludes my review of the life of Ted Kaczynski. I will conclude that what we see here is a totally ahead of its time set of thoughts. In terms of resisting technology instead of tolerating it or accepting that technology is inevitable, it is a different choice of life. And in many ways, I led my life that way. I find out reading through this manifesto that I've been making a lot of aspects of my life to avoid over-socialization, to avoid the dangers of the modern world and the dangerous effects of technology. But I had never thought of rejecting technology as a whole. And I don't think it would be in any way efficient, you know. Where do we even start if we stop engaging with technology? Are we talking about not having the internet? Are we talking about getting rid of the idea of walls and floors? Because the cabin of Ted Kaczynski had walls and floors. And that is a technological progress. So I think that Ted Kaczynski, in his absolute rejection of technology, misses a part of the important point here. That much of what he takes issue with is really control and not technology in and of itself. I think that if free humans were to engage with technology that they have the ability to choose for themselves, that it wouldn't be that dramatic. Just like the fact that Ted Kaczynski chose to live between walls and below a roof didn't hurt Ted Kaczynski. That it's ultimately the way the modern world imposes these things through control, through dishonest manipulation of the youth, through ideological programming, and eventually pharmaceutical interventions and genetic modification. Control is the problem, Ted. That's what I would say before you die. If someone can find a way to send this Odyssey video to Ted, or maybe send my book, that would be appreciated. Because my book makes the case that the problem in the genetic control of humanity comes in the control word, not so much in the genetic word. In other words, when you give up control, the other entity that controls you starts making a life of its own, out of controlling you, out of determining what you will become. And this is largely what has been happening with industrial society, as the control aspect of it was taken over by entities that are the corporate entities that we know of. As long as people are in control to determine whether they interact with a controlling entity or not, and as long as they are given a significant contribution, you know, as long as they're not being deceptively manipulated in accepting that control, I think it's fine. Just like I think it was fine that Ted Kaczynski decided to give a little bit of control to the lumber company the day he decided to live and walk on floors that were built by the lumber company that provided him his lumber. The problem comes when the control entity, as I make the case in the Revolutionary Phenotype, when the controlling entity can control so much of you that it controls even your choice. And at that point, the controlling entity has full determining outputs. It determines you as an output, and then you don't exist anymore. So I believe there is a way, the fight against the technological revolution and the industrial revolution can be led in a much more narrow and much more effective way, because you could be losing a lot of energy if you fight against the whole of technology, but you can be concentrating your fight against the most negative and deceptive aspect of all this control that is birthing into the world, which will be the day a machine decides what your children's genes are, and as such it will decide what your children's choices are. I believe that this more limited fight is worth pursuing. That being said, I have to take my hats off to the case of Ted Kaczynski, which is a much more radical case than mine, where he thinks that rejecting it all is the solution. That is it for tonight, boys. Do you agree that Ted's manifesto was deeply correct? 4 people have said yes. 2 people have said, haven't read it. But interestingly, no one says that it's... No one answered no. So you seem to agree with Ted Kaczynski in his estimation of the situation of modern totalitarian tendencies in the left. Thomas O'Ward says, I remember reading Mark Zuckerberg wanted to spend a year eating only food he had grown / raised / butchered himself. I wonder if this is a nod to the idea of fulfilling the power process. I mean, reading through the manifesto, I realized that so much of our world is living inside this manifesto. So much was predicted by this manifesto. There are videos of even Sargon of Akkad that I think back and I'm like, oh wow, was this maybe a reference to Ted Kaczynski, or was it conscious or not conscious? So much of my life, my own choices in life, are in line with this kind of philosophy of rejection of a part of society and its negative effects on the individual. So I'm very impressed. I should have read this before, like you guys told me in multiple super chats in my life, but I've always been avoiding doing it because I was off put by the beginnings of the text. It turns out that it's a totally high intelligence and still relevant, if anything, more relevant today than when it was written. John Drake says, I think we talked about this on the show years ago. Years ago, people were sending me messages saying, JF, read Ted Kaczynski, it's like the Revolutionary Phenotype. And I was like, you know, reading the first 20 points, I'm not super interested. But that's because Ted Kaczynski, By having this psychological construct to explain how the world works, he is playing within the kind of blue-pilled, psychologized view of the human race. That's what was off-putting to me. It's that I think with this framework, you cannot go anywhere. But clearly, Ted Kaczynski knew more than this framework. The problem is people who construct Freudian-like psychological statements about people are generally not insightful. But clearly, Ted Kaczynski is insightful. And I think that his insight comes from totally different domains, including mathematics and evolutionary thinking, whether he knows it or not. Thomas Howard says, I knew JF would come to deep agreement with Ted. Glad he managed to get through it before Ted passed on, or better yet, before JF passes on. Absolutely. All right. That is it for tonight, boys. I will see you tomorrow. Some people have sent me guest suggestions. I've been sending emails and we'll see. You know, sometimes guests don't want to come. Sometimes they will want to come. In any case, we will keep covering the news alone if need so. And as a reminder, Wednesday we are starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. The show will be permanently or semi-permanently moving to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I have family stuff that I want to put first. And so it's all good news. It's all great. But I have to move the show. And it will be for an undetermined amount of time, and eventually we might go back to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. But for the time being, starting on Wednesday, I'll see you at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Justed says, when Ryan Dawson as a guest here, JF? I'll contact Ryan Dawson. I'll see if we can have him on the show. Bye-bye, everyone.